This is Marketplace Money from APM. I'm Barbara Bogave. And now it's time for your letters. A lot of us are just getting back to work after the holidays. But if we're going to be able to pay the bills for those gifts and vacations, we'd better get back in the swing of good money management. So we've invited Los Angeles Times consumer columnist David Lazarus to the program to remind us to get our fiscal houses in order. And it's so nice to welcome you to the show, David. Happy New Year.
And to you, Barbara.
I enjoyed your New Year's Day column about consumer-friendly resolutions you'd like to see businesses making in the coming year. Could you share one of them with us?
Well, God forbid I make resolutions on my own behalf, because you know, then I'd have to live up to them.
Much easier to do it this way.
Much easier to make resolutions for others. And I topped my list with a resolution on behalf of our friends in the cable and satellite industries to maybe put a little bit of their lobbying power, and they spend millions of dollars annually lobbying lawmakers, and try and get some legislation to undo those fat, expensive, bundled programming packages that the so-called broadcasters like Disney or Fox or whoever force down the throats of consumers. What do I mean by that? I mean, for example, if you're not a sports fan, you still got to pay for ESPN. If you don't speak Spanish, you might still be paying for Mundo Fox. You pay for dozens and dozens of channels that you might not use. In fact, according to Nielsen, the average TV viewer watches only 17 channels on a regular basis. That's approximately 100 channels that you're probably not watching at all. I can't think of another equivalent in the consumer world where consumers are required to buy a product that they don't want. For example, imagine if Hearst Corporation made you buy Redbook, a subscription to Redbook, if all you wanted was Car and Driver. It's the same deal.
Well, and I wouldn't be paid for all that time I spend cycling through all of those unused channels.
If you spend the time at all doing that.
Well, some things we can all wish for in 2013. Okay, are you ready to take a few calls?
Oh, locked and loaded.
Let's go to the phones. We have a listener online who's thinking ahead and hoping to pay off some debt in 2013. Emily is calling us from Seattle. Emily, welcome.
Hi, Barbara. Hi, David.
So what's your question for David?
I was wondering what your opinion about Smarterbucks, which is an online checking account that allows you to earn rewards that help pay down your student loans.
Oh, I like Smarterbucks, and I'm glad you brought it up. Now, for anyone who's playing along at home, Smarterbucks is a rewards program, kind of like you use your credit card and you get airline miles, for example. Same deal. In this case, Smarterbucks is offered by something called Smarter Bank, which is brought to you by something called Simple Tuition. And the whole idea here is let's address student debt. And, you know, Barbara, right now we have more than $1 trillion in student debt, and that's more than Americans owe in credit card debt. So it's an astounding
staggering
number. Yeah, exactly. And chipping away at that can be very, very difficult. So the beauty of Smarterbucks is every time you go out and use this Smarter Bank card, a little bit of the money in the form of a reward goes towards a student loan of your choosing. Let me give you an example. If you have a $600 purchase, 50 cents of that will be earned on the first $100, and $5 will be earned on the remaining $500. That's a total of $5.50 in Smarter Bucks that will be applied to your student loan. So let's say you've got a 10-year loan, $8,500, let's say. Let's say the interest rate, 6.8%, 7% or so. Well, if we're talking about an extra $10 a month repaid, that would eliminate the balance 16 months faster and result in $1,500 in savings than if you didn't have the Smarterbucks program. So you can see how it compounds and helps.
Well, that sounds really enticing. Emily, I understand you're unemployed right now and you're carrying some of these student loans. That's scary. How much are you in for?
I have about $35,000.
That's a big chunk. And she's not alone in that. A lot of people are carrying enormous sums in student loans. Let's face it, tuition costs have gone through the roof. Many, many public and private universities have had to raise their tuitions sky high to deal with the changing economic fortunes and all the stuff that's out there. It's expensive to get a higher education now.
Well, do you have any other suggestions, David, for what Emily can be doing?
Well, in any case, you want to be mindful of your student debt. And it's very important to remember as well, this is one of the few forms of debt that a bankruptcy filing will not erase. And so your student debt is going to be shackled to you virtually no matter how the economic and financial winds blow. So be mindful of this. You're not going to be able to escape it. Be proactive. Now, whether you need a helping hand like Smarterbucks, okay, fine, or whether you just simply need to have some sort of program whereby you are paying it down regularly as you would, say, a mortgage, That's the trick. I mean, in any handling of debt, the trick is stay on top of it and have a game plan.
Emily, I hope that helped you out.
It does. Thank you.
Thank you. And I wish you the best in finding a job early in this new year.
Thanks
for the call. Our next caller is Jeff in Montclair, New Jersey, and he has an interesting family situation involving his parents and their will. Hello, Jeff.
Hi, how are you all?
We're great. So your parents have named you executor of their will.
Yes. Well, they named me about 3 years ago, and for 2 years I just took the file of papers they sent me and put it in a little file and then didn't look at it. And then I was listening to your show, and again, you recommended having tough conversations with elderly parents about the future and about money and about health care and that sort of thing. So I initiated the conversation, and it wasn't received well. I was, I was told, hey, what are you doing asking all these questions? And I said, well, I listened to the show Marketplace Money, and they said, well, okay, let's have a conversation. And so I said, well, in order for me to be a good executor, I need more information than just saying, you know, the key to the safe deposit box is in the box of tricks, which is kind of what they said. And so I asked, well, I need to know a few more details. And eventually my mother and I, because she's more the finance person, worked out an arrangement where she gave me the names and account numbers of every account they had. And I don't think they have a lot of money, but at least it would give me a place to start because it's in a lot of different places. But then that was about 6 months ago. When I went back for Christmas, I had a little argument with my father about something else. And he said, well, you know, we call you the vulture, because you're just waiting for us to die to get our money. You're asking all these questions so you can get our stuff. And I thought, well, you know, my father is 83, and I thought, well, you know, maybe his age is playing a role in this, but I was really hurt by it, and it made me think, well, I'm probably not the only one, that it's not quite so easy to have these conversations, especially when maybe there's some senior issues, some maybe even paranoia about all the scams that target seniors, that maybe your own blood are doing the same thing to you. So I wanted to bring this back to you and ask you, what should I do?
Well, that's complicated, but good first move to blame it on us. So, David, what should Jeff do?
There's two prongs to this. First of all, there is the conversation. Points to you for initiating the conversation. You did exactly what you should be doing, not just as the executor, which gives you some skin in the game, but also as a good kid. As your parents get older, you want to make sure that they have laid the groundwork for all that is to come. It's a very important and mature conversation that we should all have. And I'm sorry that Dad didn't take it so well. I mean, that vulture line, that's rough. That's like something out of Dickens. And you know, that it was hurtful, and I think you were correct in kind of throwing up your force fields and going, whoa, where'd that come from? And, you know, I don't think it's Jeff's fault at all. I think it was good that he did this, and his dad clearly put a line in the sand and said, I don't like it. I think you're being invasive. And that's the other side of this, Jeff. You're the executor of the will. You're not his legal guardian. You do not have power of attorney. So the bottom line when it comes to their financial wishes is you have to back off. And even though that might seem reckless, even though it might seem irresponsible, and even though you yourself are doing the right thing, they kind of have their own life to live at this point, unless you're going to try and be proactive in declaring Dad incompetent about being able to handle this and trying to take steps. And a lot of families do that, and you might have to do it too if that's an issue. But it sounds like at this point, it's not. And so the key thing for you is to respect what he wants. If he thinks that you're a vulture circling his little nest egg, then you say, okay, Dad, fine. That nest egg is yours. You want to crack it. You want to scramble it. It's yours.
Maybe, though, Jeff, are there concerns about your parents' health or financial needs that they might have in the next few years? And maybe you could recouch your questions in terms of thinking ahead for their financial future rather than asking about the specific money in the accounts.
Yeah, there may come a day, and really all I want to know is what am I supposed to do, because it started so strangely where, and that's not actually the location of the key, but it was something as crazy as that, where, you know, when the time comes in the middle of all this grief, I'm supposed to look for this key and then figure out what to do, and I just wanted a little more prep than that. I don't even need to know the how much is in each account, but I just need some help in knowing what I'm supposed to do.
Well, it sounds like Harry Potter. You got to find the key and do the thing. Jeff, do you at least have a copy of the will? I mean, have they given you that?
Yes.
Okay, so you know what you have to do. You might not have all of the details as to what is where and where the magic key is hidden, but the bottom line is you know their wishes, you know what they want done with their money. As the executor of the will, that's as much as you need to know at this point.
And I think that's so helpful about your show is that it's helped me in so many areas of my financial life. That's why I turned to you in this situation.
Oh, I hope that cleared something up for you, Jeff.
Thanks a lot.
And good luck with your parents.
Appreciate it.
Thanks for your call. Now we have Bill on the line from Allen, Texas, and he wants to run his retirement plan A by you, David. Hi, Bill.
Hi. How you doing?
Just great. So tell us about your dream for retirement.
My plan is to retire in the Philippines, and my thought process is multifold. First of all, I'm married to a Filipino, and that makes immigration to the Philippines a lot easier. But aside from that, you know, they've got a very nice exchange rate with the U.S. dollar, and also the cost of living there is quite reasonable. And so I've thought about this a good deal, and I look at the brochures, and I see the nice houses up in the mountains, and I'm feeling pretty good about the whole thing. But it occurs to me that, you know, I'm not the brightest light on the porch, and I'm probably missing something here. You know, if this was such, for example, if this were such a great idea, why isn't everybody doing it?
All right, well, you come to the right guy. I spent 12 years playing foreign correspondent, and among my various locales was Bangkok, which is not too far from the Philippines. So I get it. I get the attraction also of living overseas. There's a couple of things to keep in mind here, maybe more than a couple. If you're going to be retiring, first of all, you're counting primarily on your strong dollar having a lot of muscle overseas. More than likely it will, but you have to be mindful of the fact that the economic winds can shift and change, and it could be that the dollar will lose strength, and then suddenly you're caught unawares. So just keep that in mind. Other smaller things to think about are like, you know, you're going to be getting older. How's the healthcare system over there compared to here? Are you going to be covered? For example, Medicare will not follow you overseas. Social Security will. You'll get those checks, but Medicare is not going to cover you overseas. So, you know, keep that in mind as well. And then the biggie is taxes. And you're probably going to be okay in the Philippines because the United States has tax treaties with a number of nations, including the Philippines, and that means you're probably going to be able to skirt double taxation. In other words, you're not going to get taxed twice on the same income. Now, if you are retiring there, but let's say your retirement income is based in the U.S., fine. You are going to have to pay U.S. taxes, but there is an exemption for people living overseas of about $91,000 or so that you can scratch off the list. So that's a good thing right there.
The 91,000, I kind of thought that was only income earned overseas. I didn't know that that exemption applied to income earned within the U.S.
Exactly. Now, that's your overseas income.
Oh, okay.
You will pay taxes on your income in the U.S.
Okay.
So let's say you are getting dividend income or interest income. You are still due to pay that. Now, if you have a certain very low threshold, you're not necessarily going to have to file, but almost all taxpayers under most circumstances will have to file a form every year, no matter what. Happily, the Philippine government is not going to be able to go after your U.S. income. Moreover, any income you get in the Philippines, let's say you're teaching English or doing something else, is just a way to kind of keep busy. Well, that's where that $91,000 exemption is going to fall. So it's probably going to be good. And the last thing I would say is simply Manila, maybe not my favorite place to retire, but there's a lot of nice places. Cebu, for example, in the Philippines, that could be very comfortable.
I hope that helps you out. And thanks for calling us today.
Thank you very much.
I hope you have a happy tropical retirement in the Philippines.
Take care.
You too. And that's all the time we have for listener letters. This time, David Lazarus is the business and consumer columnist for the Los Angeles Times. David, thanks so much for joining us and for the lucid advice.
I'm off to Fiji.